Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It is the Derek Hunter Podcast for the 8th of April, 2024. Happy, let's just say Monday to you. Welcome to it. Don't forget, you got today left to enter to win the signed Governor Ron DeSantis book at patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast or DerekHunter.locals.com. Check it out. The only way to win is to play. That's right. Appreciate that. Let's get started, shall we? It's a brand new week. Let's jump on it. There's a bunch of stuff going on, a bunch of things to talk about today. Can we just be honest about what is going on with Israel? I love this. It's a sport now. Should be an Olympic event where it's spot the anti-Semite or find new ways to couch anti-Semitism. The left would dominate at that. You sit there and you hear these people and you're like, Israel's got to stop. We need a ceasefire now. The president had a big phone call with Benjamin Netanyahu. He said, you need to not go into Rafah. You need to do this and do that and do the other thing. You're like, what happened to the unwavering support for Israel that you had all that long ago? Remember the terror attack? Do you imagine 6 months after 9/11? The rest of the world is just sitting there looking at their watch going, you need to wrap this thing up pretty soon, all right? We're out. Of course, it's about as long as the left in this country remained patriotic and sympathetic. That's actually not even that long. I remember the feeling after September 11th. I remember that day. It was a Tuesday. And that night, when members of Congress gathered on the steps of the Capitol and spontaneously burst into God Bless America. I didn't sit there, people will tell you, I sat there and I thought things were going to be different now. We're going to be united. Nobody thought that. Most people were shocked. Like, oh my God, that's great. They didn't immediately go, how long will this last? But we should have, because it wasn't very long. I'll never forget the nursing student friend of a friend who was like one of the few people I knew in Baltimore. I just moved. I worked in D.C. I lived in Baltimore, and I'd moved to Baltimore in June. No, May. May, June. Yeah, the end of May. And so I inherited friends from my friend who had lived there for years and then went back to Detroit to go to medical school. And one of them, the nursing, they're all nice people. One of them was a nursing student who on that Friday, we got into an argument over the AOL Instant Messenger thing. That's one of the joys in life that my kids, it helped me learn to type like you wouldn't believe. They ended up dating a girlfriend who could type something like 120 or 140 words a minute. She was unbelievable at typing. And she was going to Smith College. And so we'd chat. We would only see each other on the weekends. And we'd chat. And she would type so fast, she'd be 10, 15 thoughts ahead of me by the time I responded. I had to learn how to type faster. And so I had to learn how to type properly, and I had to learn how to type faster. I got the faster part down, not always the properly thing, but it is just one of those things. And I'm sitting there having this conversation with this woman, this nursing student, and over GChat, and she starts going off about how, we basically had it coming. Let's be honest. American foreign policy. And she sounded a lot like every terrorist out there. Well, what do we have troops in Saudi Arabia for? We don't really have any business being there, blah, blah, blah. Like, we didn't invade Saudi Arabia and take over this area and create an area. We're there because the government is letting us be there. We're there to keep Saddam Hussein in check. We're there to keep sort of the region in check. We shouldn't be there. Holy Land, this. And I'm thinking, you're a rabid atheist. What the hell? And it was all boiled down to, this is America's fault. Well, I sent a strongly worded letter to the editor and made it clear that I did not concur with this woman's opinion. At which time, I don't know if you remember when you went offline of the AOL Instant Messenger, the door closed. When you come online, you hear the creak of a door, and somebody's name would show up. I'm like, oh, they're online. And then when they'd go offline and clunk, this is the days of dial-up when people would go offline. And I just remember the clunk. And that was it. That was the last I ever saw of her online. That was the last I ever... She lived 2-3 blocks away from me. Last I ever saw of her at all. She was done with me. I'm like, okay. Well, somebody's a little bit upset. But I'm not wrong. And I'm not going to go groveling back to you. I'll make new friends. And I did. So... to hell with that. But that sentiment didn't last very long, much longer. Now, that was, she was sort of on the fringe of the left now, which is, of course, in leadership. I half expect her to see her at a DNC press conference, our new president, at some point. But the left got around to attacking Bush, attacking everything, and complaining, whining, and pissing and moaning in about 3-4 months. It wasn't too far into 2002. Remember the 9/11 Commission, and Democrats thought they had a winner there. They had the presidential daily brief that said that it was like a month or two earlier, Osama bin Laden determined to attack within the United States of America. And they pointed that out as, aha, smoking gun. George W. Bush knew. George W. Bush could have prevented this. George could have blah, 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 all this thing. And it was like, really, you mean a guy who's a sworn enemy who makes videos about how he hates the United States of America? Somebody writing down, hey, this guy's going to probably try to attack us at some point. That's a smoking gun. That is, oh my God, there's your proof. There's your videotape of OJ cutting off Nicole and Ron's head. No, that's ridiculous. It could not, the only way George W. Bush could have prevented 9/11 under those circumstances with that knowledge is if he had stripped every American of their civil rights and instituted basically what they instituted in the Patriot Act before September 11th. Kicking people's doors in, making sure everybody has a colorectal exam before they get on a plane, etc., etc. And, you know, dare I say, rounding up people who have overstayed their visas and deporting them, or simply imprisoning them for being part of a terrorist organization. They're sure, theoretically, if George W. Bush had decided to declare martial law and turn the country upside down looking for anybody remotely tied to terrorism, maybe he could have prevented 9/11. Maybe. But Bill Clinton had Osama bin Laden offered to him in the 90s and said, I'm not sure we could get a conviction on this. And turned it down. Saudi Arabia was ready to give him to us. Give him to us. Now, he'd only bombed the U.S. I don't know if he bombed the coal at the time, but he had definitely bombed the two embassies in Africa, Tanzania and Kenya and Tanzania, I think it was. And Bill Clinton and the Attorney General, Janet Reno, they all sat around, and I imagine the Secretary of State and everything, they sat around and said, well, can we, if we got him, could we, what do we do with him? Well, we could, we would probably not be able to convict him because we don't really have that much direct evidence and blah, blah, blah. And like, well, we can't take him then. When realistically, the discussion should have been, all right, where in the sea do you want to dump the body? We're going to take him to a CIA black site. We're going to torture the hell out of him. See if we can't get information. Well, maybe we'll try other means before we start ripping his body apart. But once he doesn't cough that up, we'll start ripping his body apart. See if we can't expose his terror network. And then we will dump him somewhere in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. We'll let the sharks eat him. We'll make it warm so the sharks are down there. And we'll let them eat them. That's what should have been done. But it only took a few months for the left to start turning the corner on the we're in this together until the end, no stopping us, we will make the terrorists pay, to wait a second, Bush is the real enemy and we need to end this war, and the anti-war movement got together. Well, with Israel, it's been just a couple of months since October the 7th. Declarations of I will support Israel come hell or high water are now being replaced with, you guys need to hurry this thing up. You guys need to get this thing done. You guys have to whatever. You sit there and you go, what the hell happened? How did this happen? Well, it's because what you see on college campuses across the country. It's because of what you see in media across the globe, honestly. The protests around the globe against Israel for existing. There hasn't been one single left-wing group who protested. They protested. Never forget. They called for Israel to stop. The first protest in the United States was to celebrate the attack on October 8th, the day after. It was organized in New York by the Democratic Socialists of America, the people who support Bernie Sanders, the people who brought you Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Those people, the people who are running the Democratic Party for all intents and purposes, they are the ones. They took to the streets. They put out the pictures and the memes online of the paragliders with the Palestinian colors and heroes. Oh, yes, finally fighting back, blah, blah, blah. Like, okay, we know what side you're on. They just taken almost 300 hostages. There was no mention of the hostages because they simply don't care. They immediately called on a ceasefire for Israel before Israel actually had a chance to even fire. There was no accurate body count at the time, and the left was calling for Israeli restraint and the U.S. to demand that Israel not attack the sweet, sweet, nourishing terrorists. Oh, Derek, they're not all terrorists. No, they're not. The rest of them are the people who support terrorism. Maybe there are some who don't, but here's the idea. Get out of the country. Get out of the land. Get out of the area. You can't. You had all the way up until now to do it. At a certain point, you do have to pull up the stairs, don't you? And the plane has to take off. But if you really want to, you can help the IDF. They're looking for very specific people. They're looking for Hamas leaders. They would love people on the inside letting it be known where those people are, but they're not doing it. The left isn't calling for that. The left isn't even calling. Hell, the President of the United States isn't even calling for the Americans being held hostage to be released. It doesn't matter. Now they're all uniformly saying Israel needs to stop this or needs to wrap this up pretty soon. Internationals, but we're going to cut off aid. Democrats are saying they're going to cut off aid to Israel if this is not ended soon. Why? Because too many civilians have died this week. Somehow a Palestinian life is the most precious life on the face of the earth. I would posit that it's no more special than any other life, regardless of gender, race, age, ethnicity, religion, whatever. It doesn't matter. A life is a life is a life. That's what I would argue. I realize now that that's sadly a controversial position. A Palestinian life is the tops. I didn't realize that there was a food pyramid of human life. Like, oh, right at the top, Palestinians. Probably trans-Palestinians if we're really looking at the tip of the spear there, but Palestinians are the best. Ukrainians and Russians, not so much. It's weird. Jews, not at all. But they sit there and they say, well, they're far too... Now, it's the estimates of the number of casualties, the dead in Gaza ranges wildly depending on how the spokesperson for Hamas's Tourette's happens to be flaring that day. There's 100,000 dead. There's 30,000 dead. There's 20,000. There's a lot dead. Just a lot. It doesn't matter. How many dead in Ukraine? Russians and Ukrainians. We don't know. We have no way of counting. Members of Congress were asked the other day if anybody had a count. Hey, our intelligence community, anybody have an estimate of how many Ukrainians? Just Ukrainians. Screw the Russians. How many Ukrainians have died? And Congressman Tom Massey responded, said, I've asked that question, and they said they didn't know. And it's been about 3 weeks, nobody's gotten back. They said they would get me an estimate, and they didn't. They couldn't. They won't. They don't care. It doesn't matter. There is no amount that would be seen as too much. But the Palestinians, why, it's too many. It doesn't matter how many. It's too many. It doesn't matter that the numbers are being fed to the media by Hamas themselves. They just regurgitate them. Hamas wouldn't lie. I mean, aside from all the times that they've lied to us, they wouldn't lie to us again. And you watch this thing, lather, rinse, repeat. They demand that they're going to cut off aid to Israel if Israel doesn't end this war soon. There is no threat to Hamas to say we are going to end the humanitarian aid to Israel or to Hamas if you guys don't release our hostages immediately. Seems like if people really genuinely are in fear of a famine, the prospect of pulling away their sandwich might motivate them to release the people that they've held hostage. We'll never know because this administration doesn't give a crap about that. They also, you can throw as many Russian and Ukrainian lives on the fire as you want to keep warm. They don't care about them. They only care about the Palestinian. The Palestinian life is the most important. And you sit there and you watch all this unfold and you go, why? You recognize, you have to recognize that there's no difference, except for that they're not for the Palestinians in the sense that if the Palestinians were, say, they decided that they're going to leave Gaza and the West Bank and invade Somalia, they wouldn't immediately tell the Somalis, hey, stop attacking, stop defending it. No, they're for the Palestinians when the alternative is Jews. When it's anybody else, they probably wouldn't actually care. They're weirdly silent on the fact that Egypt shares a border with Gaza. They're worried we need an evacuation of Gaza, and Egypt said, hell no, we're not letting them in. And the Biden administration has applied zero pressure to Egypt to open up their border, to take in refugees. Not to take them in and assimilate them into society and treat them the way we're Democrats are treating illegal aliens here. They're not going to kick out their veterans from the military out of their houses and put in the Palestinians. But to set up refugee camps. If you're genuinely concerned about sweet, sweet, innocent Palestinians being killed in the crossfire, you get them out of the crossfire. You can set them up. Egypt has a lot of desert. You could set up refugee camps, get them out of harm's way. But they're not doing that. It's very weird. They, in fact, refuse to do that. The only thing Egypt will do is allow trucks filled with food to go in there. But they're not about to let trucks filled with Palestinian refugees into their country. The left is not taking to the streets to protest Egypt. They should if they care about the Palestinians. But again, they don't actually care about the Palestinians. They care about whoever is on the other side of the scale when the Jews are on the opposite side of the scale. That's what they care about. There's always a common denominator. Always look for the common denominator. It doesn't matter when it's Israel versus whatever. Hezbollah bombing from southern Lebanon. Well, Israel needs to make sure that the Lebanese people are protected. Really? Lebanon is just the side of a failed state. It just is. Where's the concern for the people there when Israel isn't responding to terrorist and missile attacks from there? They don't have it. Because they're disingenuous people. They just hate Jews. I just want to point it out. I'm sitting here and people, I'm not Jewish, but I'm not crazy either. I'm not blind either. I see these things and I go, that's weird. I have not seen anybody take to the streets on college campuses for right at the beginning when everybody was changing their avatars to the Ukrainian flag. They're not continually marching. They're not protesting. They're not demanding Russia do this. They're not a candlelight vigil outside of the Russian embassy. It's right next to the university club, right downtown. It's a nice big building, easy to spot. There might be an occasional event there when some Ukrainian group gets at the Ukrainians care very deeply, but the rest of the college campus elite don't give a damn. Seems very curious. But it's not curious at all if you understand what they're really protesting, what they really hate. And boy, howdy, they hate them. They hate them bad. So as they left, I love it, their patience is wearing thin. There's no patience wearing thin with anybody but Jews. There's no patience with, nobody's saying, hey, China, stop building up your military for an invasion of Taiwan. Our patience is wearing thin on this. No, instead you got the President of the United States cowering, going, we don't support an independent Taiwan. The Taiwan situation, by the way, is such kabuki theaters to be, it's a farce. It's just a farce. The United States used to treat Taiwan as if it were all of China. They did. After World War II, we had poured so much money and support into Chiang Kai-shek, and it was wasted. He's incompetent, he was corrupt, that he held the whole country, and he lost it all to Mao and his forces, which were a fraction of what Chiang Kai-shek had. Because Shek was more interested in his own glory and aggrandizement than he was in, I don't know, winning people over to his side. The vast majority of Chinese people didn't give a damn. But you just can't take over land and expect everybody to be loyal because you demand it to be loyal. You got to instill a sense of country, of kinship in people that wasn't really there before because it's a giant landmass. They share similar characteristics physically, but culturally it's vastly different. It's wildly different country. Gigantic landmass. And they didn't. And Mao was like, well, I'll be brutal. I'm going to take over everything. I'm going to force my will on people. And he marched them off of the mainland onto Taiwan. And the United States, in a bit of theatrics, and that's mostly what international relations are. That's why they, in news reports, they use this word, they use that word, because, well, they report it like it matters. Honestly, it doesn't matter. It matters for the public consumption and for the foreign policy crowd, but not really insofar as, well, countries will pretend to be offended. Remember when Donald Trump took office and right on day one, I think he was taking phone calls from world leaders today. Hey, congratulations. And he took a phone call from the president of Taiwan. And China was upset. So they clutched their pearls. How dare you? You okay? There's only one China. And like, just shut up. You're just doing it for domestic consumption. You're just doing it for international consumption. You're doing it for show. You don't give a damn. But we treated Taiwan and Chiang Kai-shek as all of China, even though they were on the island and they didn't go anywhere near the mainland, while Mao controlled the mainland. The United Nations was, it's China, it was Taiwan, but we pretended it was China. Then Nixon went to China. Only Nixon could go to China, which people don't really understand these days, but what it meant was he was such an anti-communist when he was in the House of Representatives that he was the only one with credibility to go to China and basically open relations with them, because anybody else would have been seen as being soft on communism. But nobody could say Nixon was soft on communism. In reality, nobody else could go to China before him because Nixon would have been standing there screaming using the credibility he'd built up in the House as an anti-communist going, you're a communist sympathizer. But that's beside the point. He went to China and meeting with Mao, and part of the diplomatic relations to opening up China's markets and everything, so much of the mistakes since the 20th century can be traced back to we need to open up China's markets, just looking at China as a market rather than the entirety of China and the geopolitical threat that they represent to the world, or will now. Nixon opened it up. And at that time, the United States policy shifted. The world's policy shifted. Now, mainland China was China. And Taiwan was Taiwan. But they were never treated as separate entities. We pretended that they're still the same. We said, oh, Taiwan controls China. And now, no, China's there. And they sort of have this weird joint operating agreement going. They never did. They hate each other. But we have been pretending, and everybody knows we're pretending, ever since the early 70s when Nixon went to China. And so anything that, if you say, oh, Nancy Pelosi is going to go to Taiwan. You can't go to Taiwan. You'll upset China. China is fully aware that Taiwan exists. If they are fully aware that Taiwan is not a part of China. You know how I know that? Because they're planning to invade Taiwan. To make it part of China. That would be like we're going to invade Iowa to make it part of the United States. Well, why would we do that? It's already part of it. Yeah, good point. Except it's the opposite over there. It's not. But we pretend it is. Everybody pretends it is, and China acts like it is. All of this stuff is for international consumption, for street cred, for dumb people. For propagandizing dumb people. Now, there was a time when this stuff worked a hell of a lot better than it does now because, thankfully, there aren't as many dumb people around. Well, the president's going, you need to hurry up. Our support is unwavering, but it is not unending. What the hell does that mean? By the way, you've got to pass, we need $60 billion more for Ukraine. Is our support, why is our support for Ukraine unwavering and unending? But our support for Israel is unwavering, but it's tilting a little bit, and it's about to end if Israel doesn't do what we want. At some point, should we not say to both Ukraine and Russia, hey, why don't we try to broker, maybe it can't be the United States, but some third party? And it can't be, I'm not saying it can't be the United States because we're incapable of it, but we've been too invested. We've been on Ukraine's team. We're not going to be seen as an honest broker by the Russians, but you could get a third party, a Switzerland in there, negotiate some kind of peace. Lord knows we've got the leverage. The only reason Ukraine hasn't fallen yet is because we've been sending money over there. That feeds both of them. Ukraine knows that, and if we threaten to cut it off, that would make Ukraine really interested in talking about peace because they don't want to be overrun by Russia. And the only reason Russia is losing as many people as they are and it's costing them as much as it is because we're sending money to Ukraine. We could say this is going to continue or this is going to increase unless you come to the table. And then maybe you could broker peace if you're at all interested in peace. See, you're either a peacenik, you're either a pacifist, or you're not a pacifist. If you are a pacifist, then you want peace regardless. If you're a situational pacifist, they shouldn't be fighting here, but you turn a blind eye or cut a check to another war, I'm going to question your sincerity. I just will. Why? Because you're not sincere. Because your situational ethics, situational principles are not ethics or principles. They're biases. So as you sit there and you watch the left-wing industrial complex, I told you this would happen, turn on Israel. But Ukraine only exists occasionally when it suits the needs of the White House. That's it. They talk more about, well, the House or the Senate, they're sitting on there still trying to get aid to Ukraine. And they talk about that. They don't talk about what the aid is for. They don't talk about the end result. It's weird. There's this disconnect. We're just going to send $60 billion over there? What for? What's going on over there? How are they doing without it? How are they doing with it? What would they do with it? We've sent them an awful lot of money right now. How's that working out? Is there any return on that investment? There's no discussion of that. Every once in a while, they sit down with Zelensky. They kiss his rear end, and that's it. They go, oh, all right, problem solved. I went over to Ukraine. I've never seen a less active war zone, quite frankly. Occasionally, this apartment building was bombed. Horrible, sad, tragic. But if it's like once every 6 weeks or something, how active of a war zone? What's going on over there? We don't know because nobody's going to bother reporting on it. Meanwhile, you've got everybody in the world and all these left-wing quote-unquote aid groups rushing to Gaza. We must. We must make sandwiches. We must do this. We must bring that. How many of these groups, World Central Kitchen, maybe they did, I don't know, but did they set up anything to feed people on October 8th in Israel? Or did they just say, well, look, man, Israel's got it handled. And then they started planning to go into Gaza. I suspect that's what it is. But you have to ask, well, Israel can take care of itself. The Palestinians could take care of themselves, too, if they had not elected Hamas. The billions of dollars that they spent on weapons and tunnels under everything, a network of tunnels so that they could run their terrorist operations and launching rockets into Israel, cost a fortune. What you're not seeing in any of this footage of Gaza, oh, the terror, you're not seeing farms, not too many factories, you're not seeing many semblances of society being blown up. Occasionally a hospital is raided, but only the underground of the hospital where they have their tunnels set up, where they have their weapons depots set, so they can say, oh, they bombed a hospital. Really? Why the one bomb went into the hospital? Why did the whole city block blow up? Might there have been some explosives in that hospital? I'm looking at a report from NBC News. Gaza's universities embodied the ambitions of young Palestinians. In weeks, the Israeli military destroyed them. They don't point out the fact that Hamas used them as operating centers. And they were legitimate targets. And not, first of all, oh my God, where are you going? I'm going to the Al-Aqsa University in Gaza City. Oh, they have a great engineering program. They're going to be, if you really want to, you've got a bright future in front of you. Anybody go to any of these universities? The Islamic University of Gaza, the Al-Quds Open University, Al-Zahra University in Gaza City, Al-Quds Open University in Gaza City versus Beirut Lud. You got it. There's 3-4 Al-Quds. Or no, it's Al-Quds, and then there's Al-Aqsa. The Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade is a terrorist organization. They're naming their universities this. Oh, man. It's terrible. We're taking away their educational future. What education? The propaganda that they put out? So much of what we're seeing is just a straight-up lie. According to NBC News analysis of videos, photos, and interviews with university staff and students, at least 5 of 7 of Gaza's 7 major universities have been destroyed or partially damaged since the start of the Israel-Hamas war. Oh, no. Now, they don't tell you that Hamas was there. Abdullah Abiozer, a 22-year-old clinical psychology student at Izra University, and I'm butchering the names, in Gaza, saw a video of his school reduced to rubble on social media. He said it was like watching his future disappear. What did he think about watching the Hamas-recorded videos of the attacks of October 7th? What did he think then? This is foreplay? I'm sorry that your school was destroyed, but out of context, it just sounds like those dastardly Jews decided to ruin a whole bunch of people's lives. In context, with the full picture, it becomes an absolutely necessary act. Justified act. Not, oh, this poor victim, this kid's school. No, this kid went to school on a weapons depot, right? One flicked cigarette the wrong way or a forklift hitting it and would have blown the whole damn thing to kingdom come. And let me just posit that the tunnel situation over there in Gaza, since we don't really have reliable media, and I don't think that the Hamas terrorists would publicize this. Not super structurally sound, the underground workings that they spent billions on. They are not going to go, you know what? It's going to cost an extra $5 million, but I want to shore up these walls. I want to make sure that ceiling stays up. No, they go, we need a place to store a bunch of rockets, put it under this school, put it under this mosque, whatever, put it under this daycare center. Let's go to town. Let's not worry. And I suspect that a lot of times there have been a lot of collapses of these structures because they look at quantity over quality. And they also have, since they essentially Velcro children to themselves before they go out and try and kill Israeli soldiers, so they could say, this really shot a kid. Not a lot of respect for human life going on over there. So spare me that some people are inconvenienced. Is it sad in a void? Yes, it is. But we don't live in a void. And regardless of the void between the ears and behind the eyes of the progressive left, we can't operate in a void. The whole picture matters. Never trust anybody who doesn't want you to see it. I don't want to spend all day talking about the Israeli conflict or the failures of the Biden administration on that front. I just found it interesting. There's other stories out there. The RFK story continues to grow. They're very, very concerned about RFK, the Democrats are. I think I saw an interview. I didn't see it. It wasn't an interview with RFK, but yesterday somebody was talking about Robert Kennedy Jr. And they were actually honest about it. I think it was Hannity. Like, oh, he's on his show, his TV show. Like, oh, it's he's very liberal, Ted Kennedy. Okay, finally, thank you for acknowledging that. That's kind of important because you're probably turning people on to him. But the left is still, of course, terrified of him. And they are, apparently, we'll have some audio in a second, of of, they're paying homeless people to protest RFK at his events. True story. Now, that's, of course, I've seen this before. When I worked for ATR, Americans for Tax Reform, in downtown D.C., I'd walk past, there's always construction going on in a city like Washington. And when you'd walk, it's about, I don't know, one in three, one in four of the construction sites. It's not even new construction. Sometimes it's just they're doing maintenance, whatever they're doing. Scaffolding is up on a building. They're not taking it down. They're altering it or whatever they're doing. You see these protesters out there whining, pissing, and moaning about unions, this, and unfair, that, and pay us, whatever it is. They have these pre-printed banners up, and they march around in a circle. Now, I've worked construction. I've worked on a lot of construction sites. I have worked around a lot of construction people. I'd say it's one of the top career paths of most of the people I went to high school with. And I've seen, I grew up in Detroit. I have seen a lot of homeless people. I have seen a lot of junkies in my time. As I walked past these people, there was no doubt in my mind that these were homeless junkies. These were not construction workers. How can you say that, Derek? Well, I didn't stop and check their IDs or see their check stubs or anything like that. I just noticed their lack of proper footwear for construction, proper clothing for working construction, their general sense of uncleanness, their oral hygiene, I would say, and the piles of their stuff that they had nearby. Now, what was weird is it wasn't just a bunch of homeless people going, oh, suddenly I really care deeply about the plight of construction workers. Always with these, there was usually 7 to 10 of them marching in a semicircle, carrying the signs and whatever. They wouldn't really chant because they can't, you could give them a line, they wouldn't remember it. But right near there, there was always a construction truck, a pickup truck with a tool rack and a, you know, toolbox and everything, all this stuff. And you know, oh, hey, what's that? And sitting inside of it were two guys, always two guys, drinking coffee, smoking cigarettes, listening to the radio. And if you, those guys look like construction guys. Those guys were wearing the Red Wing boots. They were wearing jeans. They were wearing flannel shirts. They just look, they looked like guys who'd been doing construction. They also look like union guys who'd been doing construction. And the second you stopped to ask anything, which I did a couple of times, and which several reporters did a few times, and they followed these people and discovered that they were homeless people picked up by the union, brought to this place, and then paid minimum wage or less, weirdly, while bitching about how other people were not being paid enough, paid minimum wage or less to march in the hot summer sun, either because the union wouldn't cough up people to take a day off of work somewhere to come and protest, or the union members said, I'm not going to go waste my time doing that. No. So they had homeless people, but if you stopped to talk to them and you'd ask them, what are you protesting? What do you want? That's when the guys in the pickup truck woke up. That they'd get out and they'd come over and say, what can I help you? What do you own these homeless people? What do you care if I talk to them? And they were paying them. They'd kind of tell you, look, we're they're working here, they're working for us. Move along, nothing to see here. This was before. This was, people think that camera phones were around forever. You could take pictures with your phones back then. This is 2000. I worked for ATR from 2007 to 2010. Before, I guess the iPhone did come out at some point in there. But in general, there weren't very many people with video cameras. So you couldn't film this stuff. A video camera was a big-ass thing. And it's just ironic. It was funny watching this thing going, oh, my goodness. It's homeless people. Why are you employing homeless people? Yeah, we're not talking. No comment. The Democrats had been famous for this. In 2004... I remember it like it was yesterday. I remember it like it was 20 years ago. 2004, I forget where the Democratic convention was. I think it might have been in Boston, as a matter of fact, because John Kerry was the nominee, and everybody kind of figured it would be John Kerry. The Democrats had an honor guard bring in the flag and, you know, stand on stage, and it was veterans. Moreover, it was homeless veterans. They brought them in and a crowd went wild. Here are the homeless veterans presenting the colors of the United States of America, and God bless them. Only in George Bush's America would veterans be homeless. And then as soon as their bit was done, they were given their money and shown the door. There was no, you would think that just from a PR standpoint, you'd go, all right, we're going to use these four people to present the colors of the United States. They're homeless veterans. We're going to make the night a theme of how George W. Bush sucks when it comes to veterans. All right, maybe we should, I don't know, find them an apartment. Maybe we should, the people that we are going to use as human props, maybe we shouldn't just chuck them out the back door with the, you know, chicken bones at the end of this. Maybe we should, I don't know, do so, because maybe some enterprising reporter will go, hey, what happened to those homeless guys? We'd like to talk to them and see how their lives have changed by their involvement with the Kerry campaign. No, it didn't occur to anybody. They just said, all right, we're done with you. Out you go. Here's your money. Piss off. The story was written, and it was kind of funny. Sad, but funny. John Kerry's whole thing was, I'm a veteran, I'm a super veteran, blah, 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 blah. Democrats have a long and storied history of paying homeless people to pretend to be interested in certain things, to care about, because they do have a professional protesting class, but it's difficult. Right now, they're fully engaged in trying to destroy Israel. They can't mobilize them away from that. That's their priority. That's something they actually believe in. They hate the Jews. So you can't say, look, we need a couple of you trust fund babies to come down and follow Robert Kennedy around. Like, you're not going to get very many people to do that, because unless you're going to say we need to destroy Israel. We're not interested. They're kind of mad at Joe Biden, and he's itching towards there. But Homeless people are everywhere, thanks to Bidenomics. So it's really easy to corral some of them. And if you know that somebody would really love $20 worth of heroin at any given moment, you could dangle $20 in front of them and you can get them to go out and protest at your thing. James Carville famously said about Paula Jones, tells you how much Democrats respect women, drag a $100 bill to a trailer park, you never know what you're going to get. Now you drag $20 through Skid Row, you know exactly what you're going to get. You're going to get somebody who, as long as they're not in the throes of withdrawal, is going to do exactly whatever it is you tell them to do. Whatever, you march in this circle, I'll march in that circle. If I'm going to get my money, get my fix, get my high on. But a funny thing happens at these left-wing protests, and you notice it if you notice things. And I'll point it out to you so that you'll notice it again in the future. No matter what the cause, no matter how quickly and how new the cause is, the signs are pre-printed, or they are written out by somebody with the greatest, you'd think everybody out in the streets would have the greatest penmanship on the face of the earth. You asked a room of 10 people to just write, to copy a paragraph from Moby Dick onto a piece of paper, three of them will be legible. Most of the rest of them will be illegible, mine included, and they'll all include massive misspellings. But if you watch a left-wing protest, you watch footage of left-wing protests, they'll either be printed up signs with, and you look for it at the bottom, a union label. There's always, the Democrats have to print their signs at a union print shop or they catch hell for it. So it's at a, it's got a union label on it, and you go, hey, this, who, how is a spontaneous protest, how do they have time to get to a union shop, put in a job order, order a bunch of signs, and have it done within a couple of hours of something happening? Where'd they get, it costs money. Once you start asking that question, you open up a whole can of worms that maybe these people aren't really sincere. Maybe this is all planned. Maybe this is staged. Maybe this is for show. And the ones that are handwritten are all handwritten by very few people. You will notice the same lettering. They train these people how to do it. It's in, it's block print in caps. It makes it as easy to read as humanly possible. Alternating the colors so it pops and so the LGBTQ mafia feels welcomed and whatever. You watch these protests and the signs repeat themselves. There's only so many things you can write. If you've got 10,000 anti-Semites marching down the streets in New York City, you don't have, and you got 1,000 people carrying signs, what do you got, 50... slogans you can put on those signs? You can't be carrying blank signs. You got to put something on there. So you write the same stuff. You write the same stuff in the same handwriting because it's the same people doing it. If we had an honest media, they would go to their congregating point. And at the cause, they meet at Battery Park at 7 a.m. and we march to Wall Street to tell everybody, blah, blah, blah. That's where they hand this stuff out. They literally hand this stuff out. You can go through. It's like going through an old country buffet. Going, oh, I don't like some of that. Oh, I'll take this sign. This is a good sign. I'll take one. Do you get it? They make it as easy as possible to quote-unquote protest. You just march right along. You show up. You are part of a community or part of a group. That's how you. That's how they seduce so many people. The actual number of committed leftists is rather small, but like I say, never underestimate the ability of a small number of people to commit horrible, horrible things. And there's just a whole bunch of people who go, well, it's the social event of the season. It's the thing to do. They don't know. It's why you can interview these morons and go, what does from the river to the sea Palestine will be free mean? I don't know. I think it means peaceful coexistence. Yeah, peaceful coexistence. You think so? You think so, do you? If I gave you $1 million and put a yarmulke on your head, would you go to the West Bank? Would you go to Gaza? No, you wouldn't. I mean, if you would, you're an idiot. But, yeah, there's no peaceful coexistence. And, oh, by the way, the Hamas charter, does Google not work on your phone and your computer? The Hamas charter not only calls for the extermination of Israel, it calls for the extermination of Jews, not just in Israel, not just from the river to the sea, but from the equator to the equator, from everywhere around the world, from the international dateline to the international dateline. They are calling for the exact and complete and total finishing of Hitler's mission. So tell me again how you're anti-fascist. And give me more detail this time than just your purple hair and your Doc Martens, okay? Go. Speaking of purple hair, as we do, that reminds me of this tweet that I found absolutely hilarious. Wired magazine that covers tech, if you're unfamiliar with it. They had, they've done an investigation. Everybody's looking into AI. What about AI? What about AI? Says, an investigation by Wired fed a variety of prompts into Midjourney, a popular AI, artificial intelligence, image generator. Prompts for front-facing photo of a non-binary person, a bisexual person, a transgender man, and an asexual person all return similar results. A skinny white person with short hair. And that hair, for some reason, is almost always purple. And there's the pictures that they generated. And it's the same person. It's the same hairdo. It's Rachel Maddow. Honestly, it's Rachel Maddow before she gets a comb in the morning, right? That's just what, it's not a slam against Rachel Maddow. She knows that she's a lesbian. Everybody knows she's a lesbian. But it's like, it's wavy. It definitely needs to have a brush run over it or something. But it's hilarious. It's the same person. The only difference is front-facing of a non-binary person is a chick with purple hair. And then a bisexual person, chick with purple hair. And then a transgender man is a dude, got a beard and purple hair. And then an asexual person, dude, 5 o'clock shadow, purple hair. The purple hair is kind of a dead giveaway. Just saying. Purple hair, dead. Purple hair, run away. Any other color? That's not actually true, but it's just kind of funny that AI picks up on these subtleties and it absolutely hammers them. It just hammers. They get what the people who wrote the Google code. They don't like Whitey. They don't like the United States. Everything is racist and blah, blah, blah. And they say, show me a picture of the founding father. Like, here's a black guy. Like, no. Show me a picture of the Pope. Here's a black guy. No. How could you? You have access to everybody who was this person or these people or this position or whatever. Why would you pick these? Well, because they know what George Washington looks like and Ben Franklin. They know what all the founding fathers look like, and they know what every pope looks like. They also know that's bad. That's bad. That's the problem. That's bad. That's the danger of this crap. Now Google says, well, geez, sorry about that. We're going to fix that problem with the bias. And I'm like, no, you're not. You're going to bury it. You're going to tweak it. This was the most visible. This was the undeniably absurd way that the bias manifested itself. You're going to take that away. But the bias is still going to be there. It's just going to be more subtle, more ingrained. Just like, you know, your bias is in your search. That's kind of how it works. So you sit there and if you think, hey, man, things are getting better, this is a good thing that we've outed the problems with AI. No, you didn't. You just helped them. The problem is with the company. It's not with their product. It's with the company. And it's not going to change because the image results are different. Let me see. I'm going to run an experiment. Okay, there that is. And now we go to Google. I'm just curious if this has been fixed. I wrote a column calling our idiot vice president when Joe Biden was vice president. Yeah. Oh, now it actually comes up on the first page. But Bing returns our idiot vice president, which is the title, as the first result when you put it in quotation marks. Google turns it up like fourth. Now if we remove Bing, it disappears. It's weird. It's the bias inherent in the system. Now we remove it from Google. I wonder where at some point these will show up. A piece, and you write in the title of the column. and it doesn't show up unless you put it in quotation marks. By the way, if you don't know, if you put something in quotation marks, that means return the exact results. If you want to look for a specific thing or some information from a site, you put in whatever it is. You type the words you want, and then you type site, S-I-T-E colon, and then whatever it is you're looking for, whatever word you're looking for, with no space between the colon and the word. Just say, if you're doing research, as somebody who's done a lot of research, giving you that. But the bias in AI, still there. It's kind of funny sometimes, but it masks an important fact that as we move towards this crap, and we're not there yet, but as we move towards this stuff, it's only going to get worse. It's not going to get better. And they're only going to hide the bias. They're not going to get rid of it because the bias isn't in the code. It's in the coder. It's in the company. Keep that in mind. All right, I want to get back away from purple hair and toward Robert Kennedy Jr. and the homeless people. Robert Kennedy Jr. was in the Philadelphia area yesterday, I believe, and he was talking to a group of supporters. He held an event. That's what he does when you're running for president. Now, he's not on the ballot yet in Pennsylvania. Democrats are fighting like hell to keep him off the ballot there and everywhere else because this is what democracy looks like. Democracy is all about limiting choices and forcing people to their will. Obviously. I mean, maybe not. I don't think they're reading the Constitution. I think they've confused that with Mein Kampf. Could be wrong. Oh, by the way, speaking of Mein Kampf, nothing good ever comes from a transition in a sentence like that. But Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer has a book coming out. Yes, good old Gretch. Here's the cover of her book, True Gretch. What I've learned about life, leadership, and everything in between. And there she is. She's on she's wearing a leather jacket on the cover of the book with her arms folded. You know she's tough. You know she got six figures in advance for that. And you know there's no way in God's green earth people go, you know what? I really want a book about the unpleasant governor of the state of Michigan. But here's the release from that book from Simon & Schuster, big time publisher. The publishing industry is largely a left-wing money-funneling operation. To Simon & Schuster announced today that it will publish True Gretch, What I've Learned About Life, Leadership, and Everything in Between, by trailblazing Michigan governor and rising Democratic star Gretchen Whitmer on July 9th, 2024. And you go, why? How? What? Trailblazing? Okay, the rest of it you can't disagree with. She's a governor. She's a Democrat. Democrats love her because she prevented people from buying car seats and seeds and everything during COVID. And she said, I'm not going to do it. You got to stay home. You can't even go up to northern Michigan. You have to stay home. And her husband went up to northern Michigan. He was just doing yard work. Oh, okay. So it's okay for him to take care of your up north place. It's different when her husband does it. And her husband using the don't you know who my wife is when he's trying to launch a boat during COVID lockdowns, not a long weekend where they're just booked. It was, you're not allowed to do this. And he said, yeah, but does it matter if my wife's governor? That one. It's a testament, honestly, to how poor of a candidate Tudor Dixon was. I really do wish that Republicans would stop elevating people who lose. Democrats do it too, but they do it in a way that is meant to re-elevate them so that they can run again. For 4 years, it was Stacey Abrams is the saint. She's wonderful. She's blah, blah, blah. And they wanted her to run again. She got her ass handed to her again, even worse this time. And they kind of have let her go. Have you noticed? She's not been around a lot lately. They go, all right, well, we tried. Sorry. But with Republican losers, we renominate them, we're not really, they're not changing them, they're not claiming anything, we're just like, they're going to shout their way to the nomination. Or they go, this person we need to have on. This person lost by a lot in a winnable race. We should put them on television all the time and give them a podcast. That's the way to go. And you're like, if you're looking to... You wouldn't want to learn from losers. I almost made a William Jennings Bryan joke there. You wouldn't want to, if you're running for president, you wouldn't want to go William Jennings Bryan, ghost of William Jennings Bryan. Please tell me what to do. Now, most people don't know who William Jennings Bryan is. He's the only person to run as a major party nominee three times and lose every single time. He ran three times as a Democrat for president and lost. And you wouldn't want to, cautionary tale, what not to do, you look to William Jennings Bryan. What to do, you don't. For some reason, the left or the right goes, oh, well, this person, we must elevate them. They got the base excited. Well, not enough. Not enough, apparently. And you can get your base excited at all you want. Congratulations. You're going to lose with 40% of the vote, but that 40% of the vote really loves you. Really loves you. It's a great way to, you know, launch a business, to make money. Not such a great way to win elections. So it would be nice if the Republican Party and the conservative movement in general would stop elevating people who lose. Who, you know, don't seem to have learned, at least don't seem to have learned the lessons of why they lost. And you just go, well, this person's attractive. This person is able to string together a coherent sentence. Whatever it is this person can do, let us get them and elevate them. And that doesn't make any sense. But that's the way the world works. Anyway, it says, I don't know how she's trailblazing, Gretchen Whitmer. She should have lost, but she won because the Republicans saw a tap and putt and said, give me the wedge. Try that with the wedge. And it said, this book provides an unconventionally honest. Unconventional. That means that she usually lies. But in the book, she tells the truth, allegedly. And this book provides an unconventionally honest, personal, and funny account of her remarkable life and career, full of insights that guided her through a global pandemic, showdowns with high-profile bullies, and even a kidnapping and assassination plot orchestrated by the FBI, by the way. You gotta love the way that the left just goes, well, I only like this part of the truth. The rest of the truth can just be kind of swept under the rug. I'm interested in this part of the truth. Which means you're not at all interested in the truth. You're just not at all interested in the truth. Simon and Schuster, they're going to lie because why? Because there's money in it for them. There's money in it for Gretchen Whitmer. She's going to lie. There's also martyrdom in it for Gretchen Whitmer. They threatened my life. Literally everybody except for like one guy involved in the kidnapping and assassination plot was an FBI informant trying to entrap each other. It's like the drug dealers and the drug sellers and the drug buyers are both with the DEA. One side, federal agents. And the other side pulls out there, goes, federal agents, don't move. No, I'm a federal. No, we're federal agents. What? We're all federal agents? Ah, crap. All right, well, we got a whole bunch of blow here. Why don't we just get wasted and see what the weekend goes? But no, Gretchen Whitmer will get, you know, $250,000, $500,000 for a book nobody will read, because that's how it works. It says, when Gretchen Whitmer was growing up, her beloved grandmother Nino taught her that you can always find something good in other people. Quote, even the meanest person might have pretty eyes, end quote. She would say. Nino's words persuaded Whitmer to look for the good in any person or situation. Just one of the many colorful personal experiences that have shaped her political vision. And, as Whitmer writes, one that resonated more than another piece of advice her grandmother offered to her to, quote, never part your hair in the middle, end quote. That's what they're using to try and sell this book. Do you imagine? Why wouldn't you just go and we gave her $500,000 and then we're just going to call it a day. We're not going to publish it. Oh, there's good in everybody. Look at his eyes. Look at their eyes. Oh, it's wonderful. That's what it means. Just look for the good in people. A politician. Grandma told me to look for the good in the people. And then she cited superficial crap like the color of their eyes. Actually, that's the perfect Democrat if you think about it. Just Unbelievable. Never part your hair in the middle. Comb your hair over your face and comb it into your mouth so you can't talk. I mean, can we agree on that, Gretch? Anyway, back to Robert Kennedy Jr. At his event, he announced to the crowd, and these are likely left-leaning people going to see Robert Kennedy at an event, talking about, and that's who he's talking to, that's his crowd. And he lays out just how afraid Democrats are of him as they fight to get his name removed from the ballot, as they fight to try and intimidate him. They won't give him Secret Service protection while they're also letting their army of militant whack jobs know that he's really an agent of Donald Trump and may well end up flipping this election, i.e., hint, 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 James Hodgkinson, where are you when we need you? But he points out how these homeless people are paid to protest them because they went and asked. That's the one thing about homeless people is the only time they'll ever really lie to you, because they don't really care, but the only time they'll ever really lie to you is if I give you this $5, are you going to buy drugs with it or are you going to buy a sandwich? Totally, sandwich. You're going to buy a sandwich. No, they're going to buy drugs. Other than that, they got no F's to give when it comes to anything else. They'll just blurt out, you're paid to protest. Yeah, I'll give you $20 to sit here and call JFK or RFK Jr. Hitler. Yeah, no, we're paid by Democratic Party's paying us to do that. Why? What do you care? What does it matter? We got cash up front. We don't do this without cash up front. Here's RFK Jr.
The Biden campaign now has $1.1 billion that it's raised. It's going to have $3 billion. It's double the biggest campaign in history. More is going to be spent on this presidential campaign. He's going to spend a lot of it trying to make sure I don't get on ballots. But when I was a kid, my father's Democratic Party and John Kennedy's Democratic Party was fighting to make sure every American had the right to vote.
Yeah.
Today's Democratic Party is trying to end our right to vote, your right to vote for me. They're trying to get me off the ballot in this state. They're spending millions and millions of dollars to do that. And then also, to slander, to lie. I mean, I was very happy today to see the protesters outside. And when our staff interviewed them, they said, yeah, we were all paid to be here. And their posters were all written by the same guy. One of them had a poster that said, shame on you, RFK, for stopping the COVID vaccine, which, by the way, I didn't do. I said, shame on you. And one of our staffers said, did you take the COVID vaccine? And he said, hell no. And they all said, yeah, we were paid to be here. We don't care. But I'm glad, because I'm glad that the DNC and the White House are finally are doing something to help poor people in this country.
But they are paid. They are paid protesters. That's how the left operates. That's who the left is. They have a professional protester class. It's just that they're all tied up right now, marching against Israel, that they can't be mobilized against RFK. They will be mobilized against RFK if Joe Biden fully comes out against Israel. That's it. They care about left-wing causes, and it doesn't get more left-wing than the destruction of Israel and the embrace. See, it's in the leftist worldview, which is wildly simplistic. Children have a more complex worldview than your average leftist. It is, you are either all good or all bad. And they see everything in black and white. You're either all good or you're all bad. And Israel is all bad. And that's it. That's the worst bad, the biggest bad in the world. And so they feel as though marching in Manhattan will somehow cause people in Tel Aviv to go, well, did you see that there's people marching in Manhattan? Yeah, I realize that we're fighting an existential threat to our existence here in these terrorists who killed 1,200 innocent civilians for no other, just tortured them. They're just awful people. But we are really not going to get a good letter of recommendation from the faculty at Rutgers. for whatever purpose they are. I don't know why we listed them as a reference on our resume, but we are screwed if we go for another job and that somebody checks our references beyond the title. So we should probably, they're demanding not only that we stop bombing Hamas, they're now demanding that there's an academic paper and an op-ed in the New York Times calling for us to actually arm Hamas. So we better, and the Biden administration is now saying that they will only send us aid if we give it directly to Hamas. We should probably change things. I'm exaggerating, of course. But horrifyingly, I'm only exaggerating slightly. I just recommend next time, if you're in a city and you see, and it'd have to be during a weekday and during work hours, you will see these construction people. They're still out there. It's a profession. It's what they do. You will see these construction protesters. I highly recommend you just slow down a little bit, maybe get caught by a light at that intersection, and look at them. And then ask yourself, does that person really look like a construction worker? Not only a construction worker, but a union construction worker. Look, if somebody, your neighbor's putting up a garage on a Saturday, hoping that the local government doesn't notice and no inspector drives by because it's a weekend, you might see people looking like this sitting there because you can swing a hammer and that's about it. And you pay him cash under the table and nobody needs to know and it's the perfect crime. But in general, on a job at a union site, they have dental. That's kind of the dead giveaway. They have just, that's a good rule of thumb to go by. They have dental. People with jobs, people with union jobs, think they have dental. And then you go, why the hell, why didn't they use union people? Once you go down that rabbit hole, you realize that the union goons, they don't want to pay union wages. And then hilarity ensues. Oh, by the way, we do have new jobs numbers. The left is beside, they're excited. Joe Biden trotted out to tout how wonderful the jobs numbers are. 303,000 jobs. They're only expecting 200 and some thousand. Again, goes to my belief, my firmly held belief that's true because I believe it and because I know it to be true, that economists don't know squat about anything. These numbers are just made up. They're like, oh, well, it's more than economists expected, less than economists expected. Why would anybody ever take advice from economists if they're this wildly bad at predicting something as basic as jobs numbers, where there are jobs numbers, there are indicators and statistics and data from all over the place on a daily, if not weekly basis. And you go, huh? Why do you get this wrong all the time? And they'll look at you cross-eyed going, it's not my job to get it right. Like the weatherman. You were way off. It poured today. You ruined my beach day. It's not my job to get it right. It's my job to fill 4 minutes of airtime and give a shout-out to the sponsor for Wiz Weather, brought to you by Tommy's Umbrellas. Just to give it some perspective. Because you say, well, 303,000 jobs, that's pretty darn good right there, Derek. Maybe Joe Biden is on to something. Let's just take a little walk, if you will. Grab my hand. We'll go down memory lane. We don't have to go very far. We don't even need the Wayback Machine for this thing. We just need to look over our shoulder. We'll just look back at the past year, and we'll do it in reverse order. January 2024. They've only revised those numbers down once so far, but they usually revise all these numbers down twice. The further you get away, the more revisions there are. But the first revision, now the original number for jobs created in January 2024, Joe Biden is still frothing at the mouth. Well, probably not just because of this, but partially because of this. Because there were 353,000 jobs created in the month of January of this year. And you go, wow, that's a lot of jobs. Sure is. Then a month later, when they announced the February numbers, they revised those numbers down. It's weird. This always happens. This is how you can tell government is corrupt, and it doesn't matter who is running government. And government is just making this stuff up. Every time new numbers are announced, they revise the old numbers. And you go, wait a second, why don't you get them right the first time? Well, because these are best guess estimates. They don't actually, and they keep estimating. They go, all right, well, we'll take another. And then eventually they kind of get around to a number that they think is somewhat close to reality. But these are all estimates based on indicators. Now, it's weird how you can look at something and then look at something again the same way and go, wow, we were really off on that. But they do. They do it all the time. Hence, the revision downward from 353,000 jobs in January to 229,000 jobs. Same month, same numbers, same data. And you go, wait a second, what happened there? What happened there was they looked at the numbers and said, wow, we were wildly wrong on that. So they went back and took another bite at the apple. That seems a bit weird. You're off by quite a bit, but okay. Mistakes happen. Let's go back another month. Let's go to December 2023. The initial announcement was for 216,000 jobs. Oh, okay. Not bad. Then they revised it up to 333,000 jobs. And you go, wait, what? How does it go? How do you, look, I get you're going to miss occasionally, but that's a huge miss. That's not missing the target. That's missing the building. How the hell do you miss by that much? But don't worry. They came back and did another revision a few weeks later. And they brought it down to 290,000 jobs. So the net positive this time was 74,000 more jobs than they knew before for December. But for January, they missed it by $124,000 on the negative side. Now, of course, the initial report of 353,000 jobs was screamed from the headlines and the mountaintop, and oh my goodness, they even woke up Joe Biden to come down and read a teleprompter statement about that number. They did not bring him down to talk or acknowledge or have even been asked, honestly, at a White House press briefing about the downward revision by 124,000, but that's neither here nor there. November 2023 is 199,000 jobs after two revisions. There's the total number of jobs down, 17,000. They overestimated by 17,000. That's actually the closest they came to getting it right, if you believe the final revisions. The closest they came to getting it right in all of the last year was they missed by 17,000. Because in October, they overestimated the number of jobs created by 45,000. That's it. So you got 124,000, 17,000, 45,000. And then in September, 74,000. Another big chunk miss. That's a huge, huge miss. You'd be fired if you missed in your job by that much if you're dealing with numbers. If you ran your business the way the government runs its books, you'd also be in prison. But that's neither here nor there. Then you go back to August. It was revised down 22,000 jobs. Again, they overestimated 22,000. You go, huh, that seems weird. But they went in just to show you how inconsistent the inconsistencies are with government. The next month, in July 2023, they underestimated the number of jobs by 49,000. You go, you're missing all. Look, if you're doing target practice, some people will miss, consistently to the right, to the left, whatever. Government just misses haphazardly. They're just up there going, I don't know. All I do is I close my eyes, bite my tongue, and hope for the best. That seems to be the way they work because in June of 2023, just after having gone the wrong direction and underestimating by basically 50,000 jobs, they overestimated the number of jobs by 104,000. Now, 104,000, you go, that's a huge number. It is a huge number, unless you compare it to the January 2024, where at least as of now, after the first revision, they overestimated by 124,000. Is this detecting a pattern here? I'll just tell you the rest of the months that without it. May, over by 58,000. April, over by 36,000. March, over by 19,000. February over by 63,000, and January over by 45,000. 2 months in the past year, past, I guess, 12 months, they estimated wrong on the positive side. They underscored, they undershot, they go, oh, there's actually more jobs created than we thought. Otherwise, every other month, they massively overestimated the number of jobs created, which I'm sure is just a coincidence, because in each of those months, the president was dusted off. They took his CPAP machine off early enough so it wouldn't leave a crease on his face, and they trotted him out in front of the cameras to read a statement about how wonderful Bidenomics is and how it's working. And at the same time, by the way, the revisions are always announced when the new numbers are out, when the new numbers are released. Here are this month's numbers. All the past numbers have been revised in this direction, this direction, this direction. It's not as though the White House doesn't know what's going on, that these numbers are just made up. It's not as though the press doesn't know that these numbers are just made up. It's that the press and the White House both recognize that the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth does Democrats absolutely positively no good whatsoever, so there's no reason whatsoever to mention it to anybody. And so they don't. It's as though it doesn't exist. These are all government numbers, and in this, literally the same report that they put out on the first Friday of every month, the exact same report that the Department of Labor says, here are the numbers for this last month, they say, and here are the revised numbers for the previous months. One makes the headlines, and one doesn't even get reported. I'm sure, though, it's just a coincidence. I apologize unreservedly for even trying to imply anything nefarious or biased on behalf of the American media. They would never do such a thing. Of course they would. None of this is by accident. If you remember, during the Trump administration, every retracted story, every story that was wrong, everything, like, well, we've got to make a correction, every single one of them went in one direction. The initial story, which became the narrative, which became etched in people's heads, was Donald Trump corrupt, incompetent, whatever, and they go, oh, wait, no, sorry about that. We got that wrong. We misattributed a quote or whatever. It just immediately went every single time in the other direction. Here's a little exercise for you. Take a minute in the next day or two. Just sit down and think about the news you've absorbed in the Biden administration, if you can think back that far, or at least in the past month or two. Has there been a single story that ended up getting corrected? You might have to go and look it up, because you probably wouldn't remember, because they don't make a big stink about it. But can you imagine or remember any story that was corrected in a way that ultimately went from Joe Biden looking bad to Joe Biden looking good? The other way you can think of things, I'm sure. But the bad story, the good story, was out there for so long that it became the narrative. It became the accepted way things were. But you can't think, the way everything Donald Trump did was bad, and every story about him was bad. And then they said, oh, wait, the quote we misattributed, or we got the wrong date, or whatever it was, and they corrected or retracted the story. Every single story they corrected or retracted made Donald Trump look bad. And the correction and retraction made them look bad. You'd think people would learn from their mistakes. But you'd have to accept that they were mistakes. You'd have to believe that they were mistakes. And trust me when I tell you, they were not mistakes. They were planned. These people know what they're doing. There are many stages of editing. That story about Donald Trump Jr. getting access to the WikiLeaks emails early, oh my goodness, he's a part of it. It's Russian collusion, blah, blah, blah. You're telling me that not a single person involved in that, and the 10 people it has to go through, a story that size, checked the date on an email they had? Not one of them. No, they knew what they were doing. Let's put it out there. see if any, if somebody notices, then we'll go oops-a-daisy. But at least the story will be out there. Think of the clicks it will generate. And more importantly, to this day, there are people who still believe that Donald Trump Jr. had early access and was working with Russians and leaking the Hillary Clinton campaign or DNC emails. That story was a lie. The date on the email was after the link had been made public to the whole world. It was just some random dude emailing Donald Trump Jr. going, hey, look at this stuff. You guys should be hitting on this because everybody's an armchair campaign manager. That's how the world works. That's how the media works. That's how data related to jobs numbers works. Yeah, it's good. It's good whenever more jobs are added. Whenever that number is a positive, it's good for America. What's better for America is knowing what the real number is. Because what's best for America is Americans knowing what the hell is going on, having an accurate, honest picture of their country and what's happening in it. That's way better for America. It's not great for Democrats, which is kind of why they don't give it to you. Just saying. If you honestly think about it, can you imagine, can you envision, can you name a profession that is less right more often than economist, government or even private sector? Is there anybody who's like, well, the estimates were way off? Government goes, this project's going to cost $10 billion. And then they go, wait a second, we're okay, now it's going to cost $20 billion. Like, that's quite a miss. That's not a couple of bucks here and there, or we're going to just have to shake the couch cushions and get a little bit extra money. That is a major miss. You missed by 100%. Oh, wait, now you just revise it to $50 billion. What are the consequences for it? Where is the, this guy used to be a government economist. Today in the news, the president, Congress got together, decided to fire economist so-and-so for being so wildly wrong about the economic data as to almost seemingly be incompetent, to do harm to the United States. Their advice over the course of their career has been so wildly wrong as far as cost estimates and impact of things that they all got together in a bipartisan way and decided that they just needed to be fired. It never happens. You don't even know who these people are. It's just Department of Labor economists, Department of Labor statistics, statisticians, whatever. They just go on. They're faceless. They're nameless. Their name is government pension and direct line into your bank account. That's their name. Might as well be their name. That's who they are. That's what they do. Consequence. Imagine walking through life consequence free. You've got jobs. I've never had job security in my life. I'd love to have job security for once, where you're just able to go, yeah, I feel pretty good right now. I don't have to worry about anything. But you don't get that in real life. You get that in government. You're like, boy, Earl, you really just soiled the sheets there. Yeah, I did. Who wants to skip out at lunch and get drunk and not come back? Well, wouldn't you? We'd be risking nothing. We will not be held to account. There will be nothing. We'll get a bunch of emails from our boss saying, where are you? And then we'll say, none of your damn business. We'll see you later. We'll just go and we'll get even drunker. There's no, maybe the porn industry is like that. I'm trying to think of anything where you're just like, you can't screw. There's no way to get fired. There's literally no way to get fired. Teaching, if you've got tenure, there's a way to get fired, but it's a long way to get fired. It's a tough road to get. It'll take years. No person with dignity would go, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to sit in this rubber room for the next 30 years and collect my pension. I'm not going to teach a single child because I'm too dangerous to be anywhere near a child, but they can't fire me. No self-respecting human being would do that. But the mentality of the person who would, kind of the mentality of a squatter. It's kind of the mentality of so many people who are like, it's not my job description, or it's mine. I deserve this. It's mine. No. The people who hear the word earn and almost have an epileptic fit. Video game warnings before. There are flashing lights. This could cause seizures. You need to have trigger warnings on certain words like earn, responsibility, merit. For those people who need that, they seem to get government jobs at an alarming rate. Maybe it's time to, I don't know, relook at the civil service exam and say, we're letting a lot of people through. If imagine the NBA. When it started out, the hoop wasn't 10 feet tall. The hoop was 5 feet tall. And every little chunky white boy just walking up and going, slam dunk, slam dunk. I don't, this slam dunk. The score, tonight, this team won 517 to 512. Then they got together and said, maybe we should raise the bar a little bit. It's a little bit ridiculous. We're letting any, people can't even dribble. People can't tie their shoes. They're out there being NBA scoring champions. Maybe we need to rethink this thing here and raise the bar a little. Well, maybe with our civil service exams, we need to raise the bar a little bit. People who are off by 100,000 in their job by, you know, 25, 30, 40%, 50% in their estimates, especially their cost estimates. Did you know that when Medicare was started in 1965, it ended up costing in 5 years what the estimates were at the time, what the government estimates were at the time, said it would cost in 30 years. Don't worry, it won't cost a lot for 30 years. It'll just slowly build up and it'll all, every penny will be worth it. And then 5 years in, they go, holy crap, we're already spending what was estimated to spend in 30 years. You know what changes were made to the plan to address that massive miss in estimates and cost? Nothing. Literally nothing. Maybe there was some discussion. It was a little bit before my time, but there was nobody who was fired. There was no revision. There was no, oh my God. Democrats circled the wagon and said, this is an important program. There's no way seniors could be expected to live without this program that they lived without for every day of their lives until about 4 years ago. We couldn't possibly expect them to live without something they've comfortably lived without for a very long period of time while we figure out how we screwed it up to the point that it's going to lead us all into an absolute economic collapse. There's no concern for any of that. It's not their money. And everybody involved, or most everybody involved, no, it used to be everybody involved, when the damn thing collapses, they'll be long gone. They won't have to deal with the pieces. They won't have to deal with the consequences of it. Oh, you can keep spending and printing money because Joe Biden will be, and most of members of Congress will be long since dead by the time the economic collapse comes. You can ignore the problems with Social Security and Medicare. Why? Because they'll all be dead or out of office by the time that the whole thing falls down on itself. That's what it is. Government is now the largest, most expensive, most dangerous game of hot potato. All you want to be is not there when the bell goes off. You don't want to be the one holding the potato when the bell goes off. That's the goal. Nobody wants to, I don't know, hey, let's stop the bell. Let's rewind the bell. Let's make sure this bell can tick, or this clock can tick for a very long time. None of that. They just want to be there. They know that this water balloon filled with paint is going to explode. They don't care. They just don't want it to get on their clothes. It's sickening. Not surprising, but sickening. Since it's the finals of the women's tournament and I guess the men's tournament or whatever, again, I don't follow basketball at all. I don't like basketball, but you can't avoid it as far as it being a news story or it being in the news. Kamala Harris, our vice president, she's such an embarrassment. You know Democrats would love to just go, okay, we can't have you on the ticket anymore. We've got to. They'd love to say we need to find a way for you to bow out gracefully. But there's nothing about Kamala Harris that's graceful. And nothing that suggests remotely that she could be, look at something and go, right, for the benefit of the party, or for, I will take one for the team. Given how she got involved in politics as the mistress of San Francisco mayor or Oakland mayor. Well, I think it was San Francisco mayor Willie Brown, who's married. She was his mistress, and he appointed her to a position in the government. And he admits it. He's quite proud of the fact. She doesn't admit it, but then she never asked about it because she's a Democrat. But Willie Brown has talked about how he takes care of all his women. Willie Brown's still married to his wife. And you sit there and you go, what? Yeah, well, we're talking about Democrats. We're talking about politicians in general, but Democrats in specific. It's how they roll. But yeah, she got her start in politics the old-fashioned way, the very old-fashioned way. She earned it through hard work and determination, just if you have a perverted definition of those terms. And she's been an idiot ever since. She was talking about the women's basketball tournament, and it's arrogance and ignorance. She wanted to talk about how women's a history lesson. I can't do it Jenny Justice any better than she can, so let's listen to her.
Do you know, okay, a bit of a history lesson. Do you know that women were not, the women's teams were not allowed to have brackets until 2022? Think about that, and what that talk about progress, you know, better late than never, but progress, and what that has done, because of course when, you know, I had a bracket, it's not broken completely, but I won't talk about my bracket. But you know what? Just how we love March Madness, and even just now allowing the women to have brackets, and what that does to encourage people to talk more about the women's teams, to watch them. Now they're being covered, you know. And this is the reality. People used to say, "Oh, women's sports. Who's interested?" Well, if you can't see it, you won't be. But when you see it, you realize, oh.
Yeah, no, except, first of all, what the hell does she mean brackets? They weren't allowed to have brackets. There's nothing stopping anybody from making a bracket. Sports betting used to not be legal in this country. Now it's encouraged. But just to put a point on it, March 18th, 2021, Douglas Emhoff, Kamala Harris might recognize him as her husband, tweeted out his and her, meaning Kamala Harris's and his, brackets for the women's tournament. That would be 2021. Women weren't allowed to have them before 2022. What is going on? It's almost like she doesn't have a damn clue what she's talking about, but she says it with authority and conviction. Here's a bit of a history lesson. Good Lord. And unbelievable. She is so absolutely, totally full of it. It's hilarious if it weren't so scary that she's one heartbeat away from the president and it's Joe Biden's heartbeat. Good Lord, help us all. That is enough for today. Get your entries in, patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast or DerekHunter.locals.com to win the autographed Ron DeSantis book. The winner will be announced tomorrow, so get your entries in by, we'll call it like 3 o'clock today. Have an awesome week. Let's get to the weekend. Thanks for listening.